This is the Bob Biggs interview for April 27, 2007, F1 Engine Book.
Rocket 9 Biggs.
Hi, Mr. Biggs. This is Anthony Young returning your call.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Is this a good time to speak with you?
Sure.
Okay. I appreciate you getting back to me. I am, of course, familiar with your name. I've been doing considerable research over the past several months on a book that's going to be devoted to development of the F1 engine and the S1C first stage for my book publisher, which is Springer Praxis. This is going to be my second book for them. The previous one was published several months ago, and it's called Lunar and Planetary Rovers, The Wheels of Apollo and the Quest for Mars. While I was doing interviews for that, one of the people I interviewed was Sonny Morea in Huntsville, and he was the Marshall engine manager for the F1. I'm sure you know that.
Oh, yeah. I remember him well.
Several other people who were involved on the F1 program in Huntsville who are still around to speak with me. But on the Rocketdyne side, I have spoken with Vince Wheelock and Ted Benham, I spoke with yesterday. One of the gentlemen I spoke with, Mr. Frank Stewart in Huntsville, knew a number of the other people that he had interfaced with at Rocketdyne, and he gave me their numbers. And of course, your name came up as well. Now, when I spoke with Ted Benham the other day, he said that you had written either a book or a technical report on the F1, and I have seen stuff that has your name on it, but I was unaware of a book that you may have written on this. Am I right about that?
On the F1,
mm-hmm.
I wrote a magazine article.
Okay.
It was in the Threshold magazine, which is a company publication at the time.
Yes.
In the spring of 92.
Okay. I've seen references to it, but I've been unable to get a copy.
I can send you a scanned copy.
Oh, that'd be great. I'll give you some mailing information later. What I want to do is give you a little bit of my background so you understand my ability to work on this thing. It has been a bit curious to me that there has not been a book written on this fantastic engine. Nevertheless, I saw it as an opportunity, so I thought I would tackle it. I've been writing since 1975, actually. Most of the books I've published in the past have dealt with post-war automotive engineering history on the Chrysler Hemi V8, for example, and that sort of thing. It's always had an engineering bent to it. And so
Google is a verb, I guess, but I Googled your name and got a list of the books.
Oh, okay. All right.
Right.
Several years ago, I had queried one of the editors at Automobile Quarterly if they had ever done anything on the lunar roving vehicle. They said they'd done one short thing, but they had not done an extensive article. So I did that for them, interviewed John Young, Charlie Duke, and Gene Cernan.
Yeah.
To get the astronaut end of it, as well as I located Sonny Morea and several others who worked on the lunar rover, and I came up with so much material that couldn't go into the article, I realized I probably had a book there and found a publisher in Springer. You may have found the Lunar Planetary Rover listing in Amazon for that.
I got it with all the others that I got.
Okay. After that book was published, I began researching the development of the F1. I've got quite a few binders full any available document I can find related to the F1 and the S1C, because they're really, I looked at it and I said, you know, I really can't write the history of this engine without writing about the stage it powered as well. It did have a purpose in that, and that purpose was the S1C. But my forte has always been to interview people involved in programs And because I'm a big believer in oral history, it's very important to get the people who are involved to speak of their work. And don't know how many times you've been interviewed in the past, but I was hoping you could speak with me today.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Since I'm not entirely familiar with your complete background, I always start chronologically, and that helps me formulate my questions. But you came to Rocketdyne in what year?
1957.
Okay. That was even before the Air Force started. We'll get to that in a minute because I assume you started on the Navajo program?
I hired in on the Navajo program 2 months before the contract was canceled.
Okay. All right. What did you get your degree in?
I didn't get a degree.
Okay.
I had 2 years of electrical engineering.
Okay.
And I went to school at night for 6 years at UCLA,
okay.
But I never got a degree.
I see, okay. Can you give me briefly your background on your engine work up to the F1 program?
Well, I was, I hired in on the Navajo program.
Mm-hmm.
And it was canceled, and I was placed on the Jupiter engine program.
Okay.
And I was given the assignment of the lead engineer for performance analysis on that program.
Mm-hmm.
That was only 3 years, and I then moved over to the F1 program. I was working for Ted Benham on the Jupiter program.
I see, okay.
And Ted got the assignment to go start the F1 program, and he took me with him.
Okay. What can you tell me about how this the program itself generated? Was it a request by the Air Force, an agreement by Rocketdyne to begin developing? I want to get the Rocketdyne end of this story. I've been working on the Marshall end of it as of 1960, but even the Air Force History Office can't help me locate the documents that really put forth a requirement for, I guess, a 1 million or even a 1.5 million pound engine. Can you remember what the discussions were like? Did Air Force personnel come into Rocketdyne and put it forth? You see what I'm saying? I'm trying to piece that part of the puzzle together.
Well, it was a study contract or several study contracts for several years. I think it started
mm-hmm.
after I went to work on the Jupiter program, but I didn't follow anything that was going on.
Oh, I see.
Because it was done by Advanced Projects, and I was really busy on the Jupiter program.
I see. Okay, yes, I've read about Advanced Projects in Kramer's book on Rocketdyne, and that book is proving to be very helpful to me because it's a book that should have been written years ago, but at least it's published now. So.
Yeah.
Mr. Benham assigned you to when at the start of the F1. What did he have you assigned to do at that point? That was can you remember what year that was when you started on F1?
1960.
Okay. And what were your duties then when you were started on the program?
I was responsible for performance analysis and test planning.
Okay.
The development group.
Mm-hmm. Was, at that point in 1960, were there hardware tests of, the short thrust chamber or the injector going on? I'd like to know what sort of hardware development was going on at 1960.
The hardware development was an injector and a solid wall chamber,
mm-hmm.
which was called King Kong.
Yes.
And that was being tested in 1958, I believe.
Okay.
And design studies were done on a 1.5 million pound engine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called F1.
Okay.
There was actually an RFQ for a contract to develop the F1, but there was not a contract issued in response to it.
I see.
That got all caught up with NASA taking over BBMA and
yes.
things.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a contract that was, I think, out of Wright-Patterson.
Okay.
To study, because they had the belief that a booster of that size was going to be needed.
Okay. Okay.
Of course, I guess October 57, it became clear.
Yes.
It became clear that the Russians had a booster that was much larger in thrust than anything we had.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important for me to mention that fact that was a real driver, I guess, from the Air Force view of things, that development of such an engine of that size was probably needed.
But hey, no Sputnik, no moon program.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess Sputnik really moved the need or belief for that need along, though, I would guess.
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. Were these short chamber or solid wall chamber tests conducted at Santa Susana?
Yes.
Okay.
And there was a series of very short duration tests.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't have a lot of propellant capability.
Okay.
But the tests were like a start transient and maybe a third or a half a second.
Okay, so you wouldn't get to main stage until you had a full thrust chamber on this.
Well, in a pressure-fed thrust chamber stand,
mm-hmm.
you could get to main stage essentially instantaneously.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. All right.
So it doesn't take 4 seconds like it did the engine.
Okay. I see. Were you involved in any of the, you mentioned the tests that you were involved in. What was the establishment of the diameter of the injector established at the point of these tests, the short solid wall chamber tests? Was there an established diameter for the injector at that point? I know instability would rear its ugly head soon enough, but I was wondering if a diameter was fixed, or did the size of the injector vary? Was that varying at the time?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was pretty well fixed by the required thrust level.
Okay.
And the scaling up. Well, they double the chamber pressure and increase the thrust by a factor of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So this scaling process winds up very close anyway.
Okay.
Don't recall any change to it.
Did the NASA personnel come out to Rocketdyne to work on the negotiation for the F-1 contract, or did that all... The people involved have to go to Huntsville for that?
Well, there was a lot of travel to Huntsville and a travel by Marshall people here.
Mm-hmm.
I was not involved in the negotiation.
Okay, sure, of course.
But I have found out over the years that it wasn't a competitive bidding situation.
Mm-hmm.
Continuation of studies that we had been doing.
Okay.
So they just they awarded us the contract without competition.
A sole source contract type of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't called that. But
okay.
That in effect was what it was.
Okay. Can you tell me a bit more about your duty, say, between 1960 and 64 with respect to the F1 as the engine was evolving? I was interested in finding out at what point were how the thrust chamber itself was designed and how that evolved between 1960 and 64.
I was a lead engineer in the engine system group, and I had worked my way into a position that I was responsible for the requirements for the control system, because I recognized that the control system that was designed for the engine wasn't going to get it done.
Okay.
And that the engine wouldn't start properly the way it was planned to. In fact, I predicted that the LOX pump would blow up if they tried to start it that way.
Okay.
And I got people to listen to me and got the whole control system turned around, and therefore I became responsible for the requirements for it.
So would you say you were the author of the ladder I think it's the ladder pressure system, am I right about that?
I am the author of the F1 start sequence.
Okay. This is important to establish in the book because due to the size of it, can you give me your logic behind how you established the start sequence for the engine? In looking at it, you realized it had to be, what were the parameters in sequence?
Oh, that gets to be a bit complicated.
Well, I can get a little complicated in parts of the book, but I don't think I'll lose people.
The advanced projects people had planned the engine to be what we call a tank head start.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Okay, but it was a tank head start with all valves closed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would start the gas generator. And it would build up in power,
mm-hmm.
because it start turning the pumps, pump discharge pressures go up, and then the gas generator flow rates go up, and that gives you more power.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that the inertia of the turbo pump and the power generated with the valves closed would almost give you a runaway condition of the turbo pump.
Mm-hmm.
They had not considered that. And that would have had an overspeed of the LOX pump,
mm-hmm.
and failed it.
Okay.
Now, I had the idea that it started with the concept that if the engine hardware is sitting there like it's going to be in main stage, and you just started at some low pressure, it has to go up to the main stage value.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
To get the initial part, that was concerned about, you know, just breaking the pump away.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as you know, I guess, the pump is a LOX pump and a fuel pump and a turbine all on one shaft.
Yes, they're all in line. Mm-hmm.
The concept I had to start it with was to break away the pump just using LOX flow. What you do is open the main LOX valves. There were two.
Mm-hmm.
The LOX flow going through the impeller acts as a turbine and spins up the pump.
Okay.
So that gives it the first initial starting. Now it's running. And then these other things happen as it gets to a certain pressure level. First of all, it's in closed loop with the LOX valves open, and it's increasing in power, but gradually, not nearly as fast as it would be with the valves closed.
Okay.
And then as the fuel pressure went up, I think at something like 300 psi, it would rupture a Hypergol cartridge.
Okay, yes.
Had a burst diaphragm in the end of a cylindrical encasement with a hypergolic fluid, would then flow into the main injector, which was already having locks going through it.
Okay.
The locks lead start.
Mm-hmm.
So that provided ignition in the main injector. And as the injector or ignition pressure increased, there was some other value I can't recall offhand.
Okay. Rocketdyne is really structured in terms of what was the name of the group There's Advanced Projects, which you mentioned. Your group was named, you worked in which group?
I work in the, well, it's the F1 project.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization I was in was the F1 development group.
Okay. At some point, would you say the F1 started in the Advanced Projects group and then went to the development group? Is that an accurate statement?
Well, yes, except that I don't think there were titles like that for the... It went from Advanced Projects to Large Engine Systems.
Okay.
We had a Large Engine Systems group and a Small Engine Systems group. And also a Components group.
Yes. Okay.
And but the Advanced Projects began... the studies on F1, and in fact, Dave Aldridge, I think, is unique in terms of his responsibility. I think he's the only Advanced Project study manager that got to be a program manager if it came to a real program.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And all the others that seem to, they name a whole new management scheme.
I see. Okay. Was there a team that was, I assume there was a team devoted to the turbo pump design, correct?
Yes.
I haven't come across names yet for that. Of course, in 2007, finding people who worked on the F1 program is a bit difficult.
Jim Hale.
Jim Hale. Okay. Is he available to speak to?
I'm sure he would. He would be.
All right, great. Jim Hale, H-A-L-E.
J-A-L-E, and I'm wondering if I have a phone number for him.
Okay. All right. Well, I got my pen handy. If you think you've got a handy, great. If not, you can try to locate it later, but. So he was, you say Jim Hale was in the, involved with the turbo pump program?
Yes.
Okay. He lives there in California?
Also in the, yeah, he does.
Okay.
He was also involved in the engine systems organization for part of his time.
Oh, all right.
So he's done both.
I see. And how do you spell his last name again?
H-A-L-E.
Got it. Okay. All right.
I'm looking up to see if I got a number for him.
Okay. Of this engine, what do you recall that this when they realized they well NASA was of course involved in it at this point, and the decision was probably made that this thing was going to have to be tested someplace other than Santa Susana. Do you know what the discussions were like for in terms of where to locate testing for this engine? I guess it started early on. I was trying to determine when the first full engine tests began.
It was in May of 61.
Okay. I do have some pictures that go back to about May of 62, and it's interesting to see the nozzle extension and the exhaust gas generator runners, if you will, looking somewhat different from what eventually evolved. But I don't have anything earlier than May of 1962, I think. So what month did they start again?
May.
May of 61.
The first test, I think, was May 25th.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
It's the day of Kennedy's moon speech.
Oh, all right. That's significant.
It's a coincidence.
Yes, it is. Were you there to witness that, or did you learn about it, how it went by from other sources?
I don't know what you mean.
Okay, did you, you know the date of the test. Were you there for the test, or?
I was there.
Oh, you were. What was the duration of the test?
Zero.